What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I feel like Trump had all of these promises. He was going to drain the swamp, reconfigure the system. And what I see actually happening is like another war in the Middle East. Do you think Trump's foreign policy has been wise?
Like anything, like some of it has been wise, some of it hasn't.
When it comes to like putting tariffs on every single country on Liberation Day.
I hate the tariffs. Okay. Economically, I'm not.
When it comes to the Iran war, did you think that that was a wise decision to start that war?
For a time, it was.
Do you think that posturing towards Greenland and like saying that we were maybe going to militarily take them over, not ruling out, was that wise?
I wasn't a particular fan of that part specifically. I do think MAGA is fundamentally different. The neocon, there's a reason why there's a Republican civil war happening. If it was all the same, there would be no controversy.
All right, we're back with yet another debate. Today, I am joined by conservative political commentator Josh Carr from Utah. Josh, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I have one prompt. You have one prompt. We have 20 minutes to debate each. Let's get this started. My prompt is, MAGA is just a marketing scheme for the same Republican policies that have been destroying America for decades.
Okay, yeah, this is an interesting position to take. I was born in 2001, so when I think about Republican politics, I tend to just go back to George Bush. Is that kind of what you're thinking of?
Yeah, exactly. George Bush, even presidencies prior to that. But I think that Trump has always tried to label himself as this outsider, that MAGA was going to be this unique movement that drained the swamp, right? But I feel like when he's gotten into power, he's just been a repeat of George Bush with a lot more corruption. I mean, he started a war in the Middle East with Iran, just like George Bush did. I mean, it even starts with the letters IRA. He has blown up the deficit. He cut taxes for the rich. He cut benefits for the most vulnerable Americans. It's just the same policies, in my opinion.
It's difficult for me to even see where you're coming from. For instance, George Bush, under his administration, about 3.5 million illegal immigrants net came into the country. Under Trump, that's been pretty much a negligible amount. So I think on the immigration front, you really can't say that MAGA, or would you say neocon? Is that a phrase?
Yeah. You could say that MAGA is a sophisticated marketing operation for the same neocon policies.
Okay. So on immigration, I really can't get with you there. I don't really understand how that could
now be. Trump does have a unique immigration policy, okay. But when you look at the way that this affects Americans, when you look at the actual economic status and the war that we're in, I think it's an exact repeat of George Bush.
So I very much disagree. I had a feeling you'd bring up foreign policy on this. And so,
it comes to Iran, where do you disagree?
Let me get specific about it. So when it comes to foreign policy, the motivations behind neocon and MAGA are fundamentally different. So for neocon, it has much more to do with spreading democracy and allies abroad. For MAGA, it really has nothing to do with that. All of MAGA, it's really not an ideological foreign policy grand strategy. It's not restraint. It's certainly not some sort of conservative primacy like George Bush was a part of. And so what it really boils down to, and I know this sounds reductive, but it is in Trump's mind, what is wise strategy that helps America? But that is fundamentally different from George Bush, who is actively saying, we are going to these regions to spread democracy abroad.
There's a few things. So yes, their stated intention can be different, but the impact versus the intention, there's a difference. The impact is basically the same. I just want to back up for a second. Do you think Trump's foreign policy has been wise?
Like anything, like some of it has been wise, some of it hasn't.
When it comes to like putting tariffs on every single country on Liberation Day.
I hate the tariffs. Okay. Economically, I'm not.
When it comes to the Iran war, did you think that that was a wise decision to start that war?
For a time, it was. And since I haven't been a fan of how J.D. Vance specifically has, you know, the MOU, for example, is not something that I supported.
One more. Do you think that posturing towards Greenland and like saying that we were maybe going to militarily take them over, not ruling out, was that wise, alienating our allies in that manner?
I wasn't a particular fan of that part specifically. But again,
what has been wise?
So his Venezuela intervention was absolutely fantastic. Would you disagree?
Yeah, no, I think that was the military, though. The military had a quick in and out, and that was great. I can't dispute that.
Who's the head of the military?
Pete Hegseth right now.
Yeah, the commander-in-chief is the president of the United States. I agree that he's put great people behind him, like Pete Hegseth.
Hegseth is not great either. I mean,
you're admitting that Venezuela was great and that Pete Hegseth did a great job in Venezuela.
Yeah, but then off the back of the win in Venezuela, Donald Trump got so hubristic that Benjamin Netanyahu Netanyahu basically pitched him another war, and that was the Iran war. And that has spiraled into a 180-day war that was supposed to be 4 weeks long. So when I'm looking at the impact, I understand your point. I think it's a really good one, that Donald Trump's stated intention and his goals are very different than the way George W. Bush would talk about foreign policy. There's the whole neocon versus the way that Trump is kind of just going based on what he thinks is best. But when you look at the impact, we have spent, I believe it's a few $100 billion on this war in Iran. I mean, American consumers have higher gas prices. It is hurting Americans. And what was his stated goal? To get rid of weapons of mass destruction. Basically the exact same stated goal as before. So when I look at the current Republican Party, I feel like Trump had all of these promises. He was going to drain the swamp, reconfigure the system, make sure that he was able to come out, the Americans were able to come out on top. And what I see actually happening is like another war in the Middle East. What I see happening is Americans struggling. The economy is not in a great position. The debt is blowing up. So just to recenter around Iran, at this point, do you think it's a failed war?
I think, again, when it comes to foreign policy specifically, I think just success, fail is just way too binary. So there's aspects of it that I think have been very successful.
What was the goal of the war in your eyes?
There are stated goals. I think getting rid of nuclear capabilities, hypersonic missile capabilities. I know it's not a stated goal, but I personally believe that the least likely, though still a goal, was regime change. The Strait of Hormuz being primarily controlled by the U.S. rather than Iran was a stated goal. I believe the other one was something to do with
nukes, denuclearization, yeah. Basically, regime change, the Strait of Hormuz, and then the missiles. Have we achieved any of those goals?
The hypersonic missiles have been greatly hindered.
Okay, so they've been greatly hindered, but I guess my next question would be, if this has hurt their missile capability, why is the Strait of Hormuz still closed, and why was Trump's life in danger 2 weeks ago when he, you know, when he swapped from different Air Force One to a catering cart? I mean, Iran still poses a threat.
But the claim that you made was that this is a repeat, supposedly, on the foreign policy front of what happened in Iraq.
It is.
And we're 6 months into this, so I think that's just a little early.
How long did they say it was going to last, though?
I don't think they gave an initial
4 to 6 weeks was what they said repeatedly. And I guess when we run through, okay,
but to say it's the same as Iraq, very different. I mean, do you understand the casualties that happened in Iraq?
Oh yeah, I mean it was absolutely atrocious.
How many casualties have we had in Iran?
Well, when you count all of it, we've had a few. We've had like a dozen or so U.S. soldiers die in the opening.
16 die. We've had a few hundred injured.
In the opening strikes, we killed I think 200 people in a girls' school. In Manab, Iran. People in Lebanon have been struck by this. I believe a few thousand have been hit by this. But the point is, not just the timetable, it's the direction this war is going. So I guess I want to know if you can agree with me on this. The goal of any military conflict, the goal of any war, is not just to like sink their ships or just to like take out their missiles. The goal should be to extract political concessions from the opponent, from the enemy.
I agree.
Using military force.
Yeah, I agree. True.
When I look at Afghanistan or Iraq, we had all these big promises of a war that was going to help us. Saddam Hussein is dead, which is good. It was good, right? But then it kind of turned into this grinding counterinsurgency where 6 months turned to 1 year, 1 year turned to 5 years. In the case of Afghanistan, it was like 20 years in total and a few $1 trillion in debt. What Donald Trump is doing is sleepwalking us into this exact same situation, but we're not getting any political concessions. Let's run through all the ones you listed. So nuclearization, denuclearization, the nuclear material is still under the facilities in Fordo and Isfahan, right? Like the nuclear material is still there.
They're buried, but yeah.
They're buried, but we haven't extracted or removed their ability to have nukes. So that still is in play. Reportedly, they scattered scientists across the country so they couldn't all be killed. And then they put all of the blueprints in the cloud so that they can just basically rebuild this. When it comes to the missile capability, they still have the Strait of Hormuz under their control.
I would not say that.
Really? At this point, how many ships go through a day?
There was just a report that came out literally today. I don't have the exact figure, but people can look it up. A massive amount of oil tankers just got through, and the U.S. controlled that through. And that's been a few weeks now that's happened. And that's apart, by the way, from the, and I forget the name of the operation, but the one that was happening
in night. Project Freedom,
yes,
that one. So. Yeah. Okay, there's a few things. The Strait of Hormuz has been opened and closed like 90 times.
I know, I understand that, but my understanding is that this has been a fundamental shift in the last couple weeks where Iran has not had any meaningful control.
I guess my understanding, I guess we differ a little bit because at the beginning of this war, before the war, when you look at the pre-war numbers, there were 80 ships going through a day, like 70, 80 ships going through. Then when the war hit, it was like one or two allied ships to Iran. And I'm pretty sure we are nowhere near the levels we were before. We might be up at like 10 or 20, but the Strait of Hormuz is largely under Iran's control, and they can close it whenever they want. How many times has Trump declared the Strait open?
Oh, sure.
And then it's closed the next day,
I have
right?
No problems with that.
So I guess the point that I'm making is they still have missile capacity. They still have the ability to have missile capacity.
And you're focusing on the Iran war, and that's fine. There's areas of it I agree with you on. There's some that I disagree with you on.
Well, it's a huge problem for Americans, and it's a repeat of what Bush did.
I find that fundamentally dishonest at this phase. I think you're smart enough in politics, and I'm smart enough to understand that when you're 6 months into a conflict, to say that it mirrors another conflict that took 10 years, that's inaccurate.
Well, there was a point where the Iraq war was only 6 months into it, and they thought they were winning, and they was about to tone down. I mean, we're at the very beginning phase of this type of war. I see perfect parallels. Like the idea that the president is declaring victory very early on, then it turns into this grinding counterinsurgency where we're fighting them for a while, then it begins to rack up our debt, then it turns into this kind of stalemate in quagmire. Like, it's the exact same blueprint.
Well, so here's my question for you then. Let's grant all of that for a moment. Is your point simply that on foreign policy then, that MAG is the same as neocon?
I guess what I'm trying to say here is that what Donald Trump has enacted as the president is functionally just a rebranded version of what prior Republicans have done with some excess in the peripherals. So yes, the tariffs are unique, right? But Donald Trump claimed that he was gonna be different. He was gonna fix America for the working class. The Big Beautiful Bill cut taxes for the richest of the rich. They cut benefits for the poorest of the poor. And then they started a war in the Middle East right after that, which blew up our deficit. Like, Trump himself is responsible for 29% of the deficit. So I absolutely get what you're saying. Trump does have unique policies and angles. I think he has a unique amount of corruption with the money he's bringing in. I think he's a bit more narcissistic in the sense that, like, he looks at the world differently than Bush did. But he promised to be radically different. He was an outsider. And we're seeing functionally the same things. When the president's saying it's going to be 4 to 6 weeks, and as you admitted, we're like 6 months in, I think people are right to feel a little bit worried about it.
And I understand that. I think a lot of what you're pointing to is this idea that Trump has promised to be not a politician,
different.
To be completely different.
But he enacted the same policies. Tax cuts, benefit cuts, war with the Middle East, deficit increases. I mean, it's not like down to the T that he's copying stuff.
I guess I'm just confused. So, and I don't want to put any words in your mouth.
No.
Correct me if this isn't you, but I hear a lot of the time from liberals and Democrats that Trump is fundamentally different, that he's much more radical. He's a fascist in a way that George W. Bush wasn't. So explain to me how that comes. Like, is he different then?
MAGA as a movement was branded as something that was going to change America fundamentally for the better, drain the swamp and fix this broken system. I think MAGA was just kind of a sophisticated marketing scheme to Trojan horse, in a lot of the same policies from the past, while Trump also does have excesses on the side. So yes, George W. Bush, in my view, and you're going to hate this, he was not a threat to democracy in the way that Trump is. He wasn't undermining elections. He wasn't bullying our allies and threatening to invade Greenland softly by saying he wouldn't rule out military intervention. Yes, Trump does have a lot of excesses and a lot of unique...
I feel like it's just semantics then at that point.
Because not really.
If your argument is that the Republican Party is still the Republican Party, then it's like, well, yes. Yeah, the Republican Party did not make a 180 flip. If that's the argument that you're trying to make, then I guess we're in agreement on that. I do think MAGA is fundamentally different than neocon. There's a reason why there's a Republican civil war happening. If it was all the same, there would be no controversy.
Do you think that Trump's advisors, the people that he has around him and the policies that they're enacting, are really that different than Bush's? Like, I understand
that
the tariffs are different. So let's talk about the Big Beautiful Bill. Let's talk about the impacts that had on Americans. We can both admit that that put permanent tax cuts for the richest of Americans, right?
I would agree that it gave tax cuts for all Americans.
Well, no, not really. The tax cuts for the richest of the rich were permanent, but do you know when, like, the no tax on tips expires?
No.
Right after the midterms. I think it's actually right after Trump leaves office.
Sorry, my bad.
Right after Trump leaves office, they expire.
I think that's true for Social Security and overtime as well.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So he's got these policies that basically are short-term helpful for, you know, the average American, like no tax on tips.
Do you know who put those provisions in there? That wasn't there originally.
Who put them?
Those were in by, like, libertarian-style Republicans and Democrats who didn't want to continue the deficit, because obviously when you cut taxes, deficit's going to go up.
Well, then there's a lot of things we could do. We cannot cut permanent taxes for the richest of the rich.
Well, I mean, back to the original prompt, that shows a clear faction already in the Republican Party of a classic style libertarianism that's more old and a new plural populism, kind of pluralism from Donald Trump.
I totally
wanting those tax.
No, I can totally admit and concede at the end of the day that there are factions within the Republican Party, as there always have been. There is disagreement within the Republican Party. But when I look at the policies being enacted, it is functionally just a rebranding of what George Bush was doing with a little bit of extra fascism involved. They put a clause in the bill that has permanent tax cuts for the richest Americans and richest corporations, and they also cut healthcare in that same exact clause. Like, Bush did something very, very similar. Trump then went on to start a war. I don't mean to repeat myself, but then this war is now lengthened just like Bush did. He promised fundamental change, but we're seeing a lot of the same repeat in policies with excesses on the side. Yes, Bush wasn't trying to undermine our midterms by doing a mid-decade redistricting that surgically cut up states to be beneficial for him. Trump is doing something unique in that manner. It's not that there's nothing unique going on right now. It's that it's just a rebranding of the same exact conservative policies.
I think what's unique about the GOP right now specifically is that the factions that exist within it are people from their time. So it's not people suddenly just trying to revolt and have different policy based on their opinions that they just now developed, but rather because they come from an older era in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And so when you see a bill that Donald Trump pushes and then you have to go through different revisions of it, I think that's a great example of old parts of the Republican Party that are trying to hold on.
Well, that's just the process. Do you think Trump wanted the permanent tax cuts for the richest of the rich, for the highest?
Oh, sure, yeah.
He wanted them. Do you think he wanted the no tax on tips to be permanent, or do you think he was okay?
Yes.
I don't think he did, though. Like, I
see no evidence that he didn't want that.
I mean,
just from a strategic point of view, if you want to win elections, you just give people free money. That goes for welfare on the Democrat side, or it goes for cutting taxes on
the
Republican
side. When does the no tax on tips expire? Right after the next election. So it seems like they did have a strategy to kind of elongate it directly until 2029. It seems pretty intentional. I guess the final thing I want to talk about is the national debt. Is that something that you talk about on your show a lot?
Yeah.
Trump did promise to end the deficit in his first year. He appointed Elon Musk as like the czar of Doge in order to do that. And Trump promised unique change. This might be the best example of it because he promised radical change on the deficit. What did he do? Just enact the very same policies that we've seen in prior Republican, even Democrat administrations, like the Iran war. It all kind of ties back together. We did hit $40 trillion just a few days back.
Right.
And now our interest every year is $1 trillion. Like, you and I are going to have to suffer for the rest of our lives with $1 trillion payments.
On the debt specifically, it's both true that politicians always overpromise and always make sweeping promises that they'll never keep. It's also true that Trump created Doge, which is not something that's ever been tried or done before. And I think Elon Musk had all the incentive in the world to cut. I think that he found the government does not work like a business. The bureaucracy is very strong. He's not a dictator. When you're a CEO of a company, you're a dictator, especially when you own all the shares. So it's very easy for Elon Musk to think that it's going to be easy to go in and do that. And he wasn't able to. They did cut spending. Obviously, the big, beautiful bill overshadowed. Like, it did more than what they cut. I completely understand that.
I don't think Doge had any. Doge had like $50 billion in cuts, basically, which is basically nothing.
And George W. Bush never did that. So.
Yeah, but I mean, George W. Bush never appointed a billionaire donor to try to cut $2 trillion in debt. Then
this
they failed.
This is why I say two things are true at once.
It was a huge
failure. You can both fail and overpromise. You can both try something and fail try. I think that's fundamentally different for Donald Trump, that he was willing to fail than George W. Bush, who never tried.
Time.
Mockler Media is rapidly scaling. If you want to help us grow, you can drop a like below, you can subscribe, and if you know someone that would be good to debate against me, hit up team@mocklermedia.com. Thank you.
My claim is that the radical left is more pervasive in the Democrat Party than the radical right is in the GOP. I was wondering if you would consider Donald Trump a radical in our party.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what I would point to is, you know, and these are fairly subjective, but on the Democrat side or the liberal side, you have establishment Democrats, you have the DSA, and then you have all-out communists. And on the Republican side, you have neocon, MAGA, and America First. And on the DSA and communist side, you have actual members of those caucuses or organizations in power in the Democrat Party. In the Republican side, there's not a single Groyper or America First candidate in office right now. Maybe the only one would be Thomas Massie, who has been primaried and will be out in a few months. Would you agree that DSA is radical?
Yeah.
Even if you agree with them, they're still radical.
No, yeah, they're radical.
Okay. And you would agree that like a Nick Fuentes candidate does not exist on the right?
Yep, definitely.
Okay.
But I entirely disagree with the gradients that you laid out.
Okay.
I think that it's dishonest to say that there's neocon, MAGA, and America First, and then you said establishment, DSA, and then communist.
Yeah.
I disagree that these are the gradients we should be looking at. I think that MAGA as a movement is far more radical and institutionally damaging than anything DSA has done. Out of the 260 elected Democrats in Congress, do you know how many are DSA?
Well, I know that one third of DSA candidates that have run have won their election.
So again, out of the 260 Democrats in Congress, you know how many are DSA?
Can you say what that will be for this next election cycle?
It's two in Congress.
How many will it be this time?
It'll be like five more heading in.
Okay.
So, okay, number one, DSA is a very small minority. On the other side, the MAGA movement is an extremist movement in and of itself. Do you think the 2020 election was stolen?
No.
Okay, so I really do appreciate you saying that, because this is a huge thing that I run into with young conservatives, people of all ages. Donald Trump has fundamentally broken the Republican Party's brain. You have sitting Republicans, not just two, not just five. You have almost every sitting Republican senator who is willing to help Donald Trump, or maybe help him, overturn the 2020 election. None of them would impeach him for January 6th. He tried to overthrow the election, and you have like a dozen Republicans who were helping, aiding, and abetting him.
And who stopped him?
Mike Pence.
Perfect.
And Mike Pence almost got killed for that. They yelled, "Hang Mike Pence," and he was extra...
He didn't almost get killed.
But... Is Mike Pence a big part of the Republican Party, or is he gone now?
No, but there are many Republicans that, like, in my home state, for example, every single Republican that represents us, other than Mike Lee, completely against what happened on January 6th.
So. Okay, so basically, on one side, you have a few DSA members, and you're going to claim...
And what do they believe?
DSA members that are actually in Congress, they don't believe in abolishing prisons or abolishing police. They mainly just believe in
more healthcare.
What
about abolishing the Senate, the Supreme Court, the presidency, and
the
electoral
Does AOC believe that?
Is she a member of DSA?
Yes, but she
That is what the platform
says. She
doesn't
believe that.
And so she's just, for kicks and giggles, part of it?
She's a part of She's a part of the New York chapter, which is much more narrow and believes different things.
No.
Listen, I disagree with DSA,
okay.
But this is what you're doing. You're trying to paint the entire Democratic Party as if
in
we're beholden to DSA.
What way is it trending?
The Democratic
how many,
Party?
How many DSA members were in the Democrat Party 4 years ago?
Well, there's like two in Congress, and now it's like six.
Perfect. So
okay.
We are and over 100 DSA candidates, I just want people to understand this listening at home, over 100 DSA candidates this year already have been elected.
The reason why is because Democrats are looking for change. It's not because Democrats are studying Karl Marx, it's because we're looking for outside candidates.
I don't know what the voters are going to do. That's fine. If they want change, that's fine. But the DSA candidates themselves support a party platform that wants to abolish the Constitution of the United States. I think that's fundamentally more radical.
The candidates
than
don't believe
MAGA has ever
the
done.
The candidates are part of local DSA chapters, which are far different than the national DSA platform. But let me bring this point home, because you're going to try to paint the entire Democratic Party as having this institutional rot that is DSA. I disagree with DSA on a lot of things. We are not captured by DSA. I will hold the line on things that I disagree with. However, on the other side, you had Tucker Carlson on Fox News. He lost them $800 million because he lied about our elections.
And where is Tucker Carlson right now?
He has his own show.
What did Trump tweet out yesterday?
Well, the thing is, Donald Trump...
Yesterday tweeted out, said Tucker Carlson is irrelevant,
Tucker Carlson,
he's garbage.
Because he no longer pushes the election fraud lies. Trump is quite literally trying to rig the midterms.
He still does. He still pushes the lie that
was stolen. Trump is trying to rig the midterms. Okay, so let me just ask you, what do you think is more radical? Two or three DSA candidates who are sitting in Congress versus the dozens, the plethora of Republicans who are elected who wanted to overthrow a Democratic election. Donald Trump is surrounded by Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller says the Democratic Party is a party of extremists, terrorists, and Hamas lovers. Donald Trump sat down with Nick Fuentes, and even if I will concede that that was like just happenstance.
He had no idea who Nick Fuentes was.
Okay, sure.
Was.
You know what? Yeah. I can win the argument without even saying that. Sure, I can win the argument without even that. You have to admit, Donald Trump is fundamentally incredibly radical. Like, do you think that denying an election is radical as the president of the United States?
Not my favorite thing he's done.
I would consider it
radical. Yeah.
Do you think that it is radically against the foundations of America to deny an
election?
Problem.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so when we weigh this on a scale, and we're weighing AOC, a New York senator in a very blue district, versus the effing president and his cabinet who pushed these election fraud lies, I'm pretty sure that Trump is far more radical.
I'm just going off literally what the party platform is. The DSA organization calls for the abolishment
of
the Constitution.
Do you think the DSA platform is the Democratic platform right now?
It will soon become that.
Who was our last president?
Joe Biden.
Okay, and who was his VP?
Kamala Harris.
Are either of them DSA or even close?
No.
Or establishment? We still broadly vote for establishment.
Yeah, I think we've well established at this point that DSA, would you disagree with me that DSA has grown considerably in the Democrat
Party?
Sure,
but Wisconsin, the DSA candidate just lost to the establishment candidate.
By 1%. In Wisconsin. I mean, that's crazy to
me. The establishment candidate dropped out a month before.
Wisconsin's not New York.
The establishment candidate dropped out a month before and then re-entered the race like 2 weeks prior. And it's just... it's not being taken over by DSA. We have like 7 members out of 260. You know what the real gradient is?
I feel like
is?
You're proving my point here. You're talking about DSA had no power 4 years ago and just won 47% in Wisconsin.
Can you repeat your claim though?
My claim is that the radical left is more pervasive in the Democrat Party.
And you're, okay, so we're talking descriptively about what's happening right now. We're not talking about trends. We're talking about which party is more pervasive or which thing is more pervasive. Okay, so even if I were to grant that DSA is growing in power, I still don't think it's as foundationally rotting as MAGA. I mean, MAGA fundamentally hates the foundations of America. They don't want free and fair elections. Trump is trying to rig the midterms. Like, what do you think about
can you explain that?
Yeah,
you said that a few times. I don't know what you mean by that.
Yeah, of course. He called Governor Greg Abbott of Texas and asked him to do a redistricting of the state of Texas. That redistricting has never been done before in the mid-decade.
Yeah, all of it happened within state law in Texas.
Okay.
Anyone who's looked into it knows this. If you want to say, oh, that's kind of dirty, fair enough, it's in the laws, same way as California.
My argument isn't that it's illegal, it's that he is surgically trying to rig the midterms by doing something that's never been done before. It is radical. Can you say that's radical?
Just to be clear, that's exactly what I believe about 2020, by the way.
What?
That it was rigged in a way that just never happened before during COVID.
What do you mean?
All the election laws changed so that mail-in and ballot harvesting could happen in a way that's never happened before.
Okay.
So, but to be clear, very different from stealing an election. That's why I don't say 2020 was stolen. So you would agree that 2026 is rigging an election in the same way that 2020 was rigged?
2020, no, it's not.
All of the laws were changed legally.
Which voters were disenfranchised? Like, if you're rigging an election, you're disenfranchising voters. In 2026, we're disenfranchising the people.
I completely disagree. So it can be disenfranchising voters. It can also be ballot harvesting and paying people to vote on the street in order to
so
vote.
So I guess just to bring it back to your prompt, when Donald Trump then claims that there were millions and millions of illegal votes in the 2020 election and therefore it was rigged against him, that's a radical statement, right? He is like radically trying to undermine the foundations of our democracy.
Yeah, I think we've established I didn't like that he said that.
So the answer to my question is yes. On the other side of that, can you name one Democrat or DSA member or person in power that's been so pervasive that they have fundamentally tried to overthrow an election, like overthrow the election dates? Is there an example there?
Well, I can list several times that Democrats have not accepted elections.
They tried to overthrow an election?
No, I don't think that. I don't think Trump has tried to overthrow an election either.
Remember when Trump sent out that post to Pam Bondi? And Trump is the leader of the Republican Party. The reason why I rejected your framing at the beginning is because I get that America First is on the fringe. And
would you not agree that they're more radical?
America First? Oh, of course they are. But MAGA is a huge chunk and they're very radical.
Do you not find it troublesome that Democrats, in some part, though maybe it's not everyone, have invited the most radical of them into their party, whereas the Republican Party has not invited the most radical side?
What do you mean they haven't invited the most radical? Donald Trump is literally... I think that MAGA is very radical. Yes.
This is my point. You're saying that Donald Trump is more radical than a Nick Fuentes or a Tucker Carlson, for example?
No, I think institutionally he has more power to enact radical policies than people like Nick Fuentes or any DSA person.
Okay. I mean, this is again proving my point. The reason why Nick Fuentes does not have institutional power is because we will not vote him in.
But the thing is,
it's proving my point.
You're building a sliding
Whereas
scale.
You on the Democrat side are electing people, your most radical, into your party.
Even by your own admission, DSA isn't the most radical. When you laid out the gradient, you said establishment, DSA, and communists.
Sure.
We're talking about the middle prong. When I laid out, or you laid out the other ones, you said establishment, MAGA, and America First.
We're both talking about the middle prong right here.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. These are spectrums that are completely...
So we can even add more. Marxist-Leninist.
Yeah, sure.
Maoist. Like, we can keep going. White supremacists,
so
Nazis.
The fundamental disagreement, then, is you believe that MAGA is more radical than DSA?
Yes. Fundamentally, they're more radical.
So insane.
Fundamentally,
by their own admission, by their own admission, DSA is more radical than MAGA.
I think that when you look at the way this manifests in our policy... Okay,
our party platform says to abolish the Senate, the Supreme Court, the presidency, ICE, police, prisons.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Do any of the elected DSA candidates believe in that?
Yes.
No, they don't.
That's why they're members of DSA.
Name one.
I understand that they do not believe that they can win on those policies.
Do you think AOC
Larkin 100% believe that lost in Florida?
Lost,
fortunately, but
to a moderate, right?
Yeah, to an Israel First moderate, because you're in Florida. But like I've said, 100
Francesca
plus,
Hong literally denounced abolishing
lost
the poli- prison.
1%.
But did she want to abolish prisons?
Yes.
No, she did
not. Why is she a member of the DSA then?
Because she's a member of their local chapter, and there's
why?
Different policies.
No.
Because she believes in more healthcare. She believes in
one
something
of those
like this.
Local policies this week, by the way, went viral saying that they absolutely hate the Constitution and abhor the Constitution. So I don't think using the local chapter.
Then they're in agreement with Donald Trump, who quite literally said we might have to terminate the laws and rules in the Constitution because he lost the 2020 election. Do you remember that?
No,
Trump sent out a post on Truth Social. Do you believe me when I say this? He sent out a post.
I'll take your word for it.
Saying he wants to terminate the rules and laws in the Constitution. If the DSA bothers you, does it bother you when the President of the United States posts that?
If what you're saying is true that he posted that, I have no problem.
Okay, so do you get what I'm saying when I say that DSA doesn't have any institutional power to do this? And by the way, AOC doesn't want to abolish prisons. AOC has never called to abolish the Constitution.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you because
well, then you're just basically reading her mind because she said out publicly.
She's part of an organization that has policies.
You're getting the national and local chapters confused, and AOC did like a 30-minute long interview about this recently. Listen, AOC
is so easy. You can just leave. You don't have to. Like these are politicians. They understand PR well. They understand how this works. And yet they don't leave for a reason.
Do you think that the Democratic Party's platform is closer to being like a center-left liberal platform or a DSA platform? As a whole, when you think about the leaders of our party, who would you consider the leaders? Like Hakeem Jeffries,
yeah,
Chuck Schumer,
sure.
Joe Biden,
Sanders, AOC,
Bernie
Gavin
Sanders
Newsom.
And AOC, Gavin Newsom, yeah. Pete Buttigieg. These aren't radical people.
There's a...
Like Bernie could be, but...
Yeah, Bernie is. I think AOC is as well. I think it's difficult because what people believe and what they do is... like completely different in politics.
Okay, so if it bothers you that the DSA wants to abolish the Constitution, then it should bother you 10 times more that Trump tried to overthrow an election and then called for the termination of the Constitution.
I've personally come out and said I didn't like what he did on January 6th.
But how are you weighing these things so differently?
Well, the reason why is because he didn't do any of those things.
Didn't do what?
And the Republican Party did not do any of those things.
Wait, no, he tried to do a fake slate of electors in 7 different swing states in order to surgically overthrow the election results in the 7 swing states.
And what party stopped him from doing that?
The elector scheme?
The Republican Party is the one that
Mike Pence,
held Congress.
How about this? Mike Pence...
That held the Senate, rather.
Mike Pence stopped Trump and then was excised from the party and lost the primary in a humiliating fashion in 2024. I mean, the Republican Party is fully behind Trump. 80% of Republicans think the election was stolen. So if you want to talk about what's pervasive in the party, yes, DSA is growing. But DSA is not the effing leader of the party right now trying to undermine our elections. Do you get where I'm coming from here?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I think it's a fundamental disagreement of you believing MAGA is more more radical than DSA. I frankly just find that absurd.
Well, like, okay, let's think about
if you wanted to say establishment, Democrat, MAGA, and MAGA's more radical, that makes sense that you would believe that. I've got no problem
with
that.
Whose policies do you think manifest in a more radical way when we look at the way that they've, you know, come to fruition? Do you think Donald Trump and his MAGA movement, which is kind of an extension of the Tea Party, which was radical back in that, or do you think that the DSA candidates have manifested? Have any prisons or police been abolished? No, I mean, Democrats don't even believe that. I promise you.
Yeah, police has been massively defunded in places where Democrats have strongholds. There's no doubt that they've moved in that direction. I mean, we're in one right now.
Police has been defunded in Chicago?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think
to
that's true.
To the extreme, yeah, to the extreme.
We've extremely defunded police around here?
Absolutely, yes. Just go see what your mayor, Lightfoot, before
do you think she's
Brandon
a DSA
Johnson,
communist?
Brandon Johnson?
Yeah, so do you think that the leader of Illinois is like radical?
No, we're talking about Chicago, specifically.
Yeah, but when I'm thinking of the state of Illinois, we have a billionaire governor who's one of the most popular Democrats in the country. He's not a communist. He's not radical. We have Mayor Brandon Johnson, who albeit is very unpopular, but I'm not sure
15%.
Yeah, he's very unpopular. There's no disputing that.
Yeah.
But the idea that we've defunded prisons and that is, or sorry, I'm sorry, police. We've defunded the police.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he's spoken about it openly. Like I'm surprised you're even like not conceding this point.
Donald Trump, on a national level, has sent ICE officers into cities with masks on. They march into cities that he sends them into, like blue cities mainly. That's radical. I think the fact that Donald Trump... Do you remember when he sent out this tweet, this Truth Social post? Well, there's a few of them. Like, first of all, when Robert Mueller died, he said, good, I'm glad he's dead.
No, I'm not a fan of that.
Of course, and I'm not trying to, like, pin you down on any of these.
No, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, Trump as a human being is radical.
Okay.
When Donald Trump wanted his political opponents persecuted, he tweeted out at Pam Bondi. I don't know if you remember this one, but he truthed. And it said, dear Pam, please go after these three people, James Comey, Adam Schiff and Letitia James. Then Pam Bondi started going after them and trying to break the system by targeting them. That is radical, anti-America, anti-due process, and DSA candidates aren't breaking the laws in order to do that shit. Like, DSA candidates...
Biden did that exact same thing.
Wait, where? When?
Him and Letitia and Bragg and all these people.
He sent out a post saying to target Trump?
We haven't seen those posts, but...
So he hasn't done the same thing.
He's
done the same thing.
Yeah, I think his DOJ did it. If you want to say Biden didn't do it, that's fine. These are Democrats that did it.
There's no proof that Biden did anything. Actually, Merrick Garland was rather boring and kind of a pussy.
There's proof that Democrats targeted Donald Trump.
How?
With Lawfare.
What's the proof?
Just the facts of the case and the fact that none of them held any water, even before Donald Trump won the nomination, by the way, or won the presidency.
So you don't think Donald Trump tried to overturn the 2020 election? That didn't carry any water, that case?
No, it didn't even go to trial.
Because he became the president. So do you or don't you think he tried to overturn the 2020 election?
I think he used rhetoric that was, in my opinion, unacceptable. Do I think that he actually went to the full extent of trying to overturn it? No.
There was an effing mob in the Capitol on the day they were certifying the election results because he was holding a rally at the Ellipse like 20 minutes away. I mean, he sent his mob to go try to interrupt the certification of the results.
And you think that this mob, in his mind, was supposed to stage a coup in the United States?
Absolutely. Why else was he...
Against the National Guard?
Who convinced that mob that the election was stolen in the first place?
Donald Trump was certainly upset about the results of the election.
If Donald Trump never said the election was stolen, would that mob have marched to the Capitol?
No, but the purpose was not to... Now, there's a difference between making people angry about the results of an election.
That was fair.
And I agree with that. Well, I wouldn't say it was fair, but I wouldn't say it was stolen either. And asking them to come stage a coup in the U.S. Capitol. That just did not happen. I'm sorry. That's such a ridiculous exaggeration to act like.
I feel like
a couple hundred people were there to take over the United States.
It was a few thousand, but, and I feel like we just connected the dots. So Donald Trump told an election fraud lie, right? Because of that lie, people showed up to the Ellipse on the day. What were they doing in the Capitol on January 6th? Like, what do they do? What was Mike Pence doing? Certifying the election results. Trump didn't coincidentally happen to have a rally on January 6th, 20 minutes away from where they're certifying the results, going fight, fight, fight after he undermined it. Yes, he was trying to stage a coup, and this is more radical than anything a DSA candidate has ever done.
They will in the future.
I don't think AOC is an election-denying insurrectionist.
All right. At the end of the day, I believe that America First is the most radical side of the right. I believe that the DSA is, even though there are a few communists, but they're by far and by large the largest radical group on the left. There are DSA candidates. There are no America First candidates that have won. I think that's a clear example of the white blood cells of the Republican Party working.
Time. Mockler Media is rapidly scaling. If you want to help us grow, you can drop a like below, you can subscribe, and if you know someone that would be good to debate against me, hit up team@mocklermedia.com. Thank you. The Save America Act will not save American democracy. And then let me say it one more time. The Save America Act will not save American democracy.
So when you say save, are you meaning unilaterally save, or are you just meaning improve democracy?
It's hyperbolic. I just mean the Save America Act is not intended to actually help fix the broken systems that we have.
Okay. Why do you say that?
Well, I've read through it, and it's far different than what Republicans are claiming it is.
Okay.
I support voter ID. I support the ability for people to get an ID. I hope that the ID is accessible to everybody so no one's cut off, and that if you're a citizen, you should be voting in our elections. I don't want non-citizens voting. I don't want illegal immigrants voting, just citizens, and voter ID is fine. But the Save America Act goes beyond that. There's a documentary proof of citizenship piece of it, which means you have to document your proof of citizenship if you even want to register to vote. I find this to be incredibly burdenous. Like there's a huge administrative burden there, and it's been tried before in Kansas. Sorry, I don't want to like yap for too long, but in Kansas, there was something called the SAFE Act. It sounds kind of familiar, the SAFE Act. Mm-hmm. And it got shot down after 2 years because it disenfranchised 33,000 voters who were citizens and who could have voted. And it's because a huge function, a huge way that people will go to register is called automatic voter registration at the DMV. You go to get your license and they automatically register you. This erases that. This erases online registration. This erases mail-in registration. 5% of people register in person right now, and they're trying to push that number up to 100% of people registering in person. And it's just restrictive, I think.
So when you go to the DMV to get your license, can you, under the provision of the SAVE Act, I'm asking you, I've read it before, but
it's
been a little bit. Can you bring your proof of citizenship to that and be registered to vote?
Yeah, you can still do that, yeah.
Okay.
But the problem is, and this is just more of a conversation, I'm just trying to flesh out some of these frameworks.
Yeah.
The problem is, while voter ID is fine at the polls, a lot of Americans don't have these documents. Like 50% of Americans don't have a passport. And like, for me, it's easy to get, but I also have grown up in like, I have the means to do it. I own a car, I have money, so I can go get my passport. A lot of Americans, even in rural areas, can't really drive and get a passport like that. That it's birth certificate. I believe like 30% of Americans don't have active access to their birth certificate. Mine's an hour away at my parents' place in Indiana. Then there's the real ID with citizenship, but the real ID only shows citizenship in 5 states out of 50. So like they've put these narrow ways to register, and it just seems restrictive. Like these are random narrow documents that many Americans don't have access to. And we want to make registering something that's easy. Like I registered online, I believe, when I was 18 years old. I did it through the online portal, and it took me like 3 minutes, I think. I don't know. But you can't do that under the Save America Act, and that would hurt a lot.
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental disagreement on how easy voting should be. Like I personally don't think voting should be super easy. I think it should require some level of burden, and that in a way is proving that you actually care about what you're doing. I'm curious to hear from you, though, and that goes a little bit beyond the Save America Act, but my question for you is, you brought up some concerns. Why not make it easier to have some of those concerns alleviated rather than get rid of that provision in the first place? For example, if there are 30% of people who don't have access to their birth certificate, why not create a system where they can access a new copy of their birth certificate?
Because I don't think that this bill is meant to address a problem that's real in the first place. Non-citizen voting is not a real problem in the United States. The Heritage Foundation did a study, and since 2000, there's only been 99 cases of non-citizen voting. Since 2000, that's like 4 per year. Obviously, it should be zero. But we don't want to disenfranchise 1 million Americans in order to stop 99, like 1 million Americans per election to stop 4 non-citizens from voting, right? So I don't think it's a real problem that we're trying to fix. I think it's honestly just a pretty insidious scheme from Republicans to restrict people from registering.
Yeah, it's true that I think we don't have, frankly, a lot of data on how many illegal immigrants have voted, but it is true that the DHA, or the Department of Homeland Security, the DHS, excuse me, just released their report that there was around 300,000 non-citizens that were registered to vote. Whether or not they voted or not, we don't know. But 300,000 strikes me as a number that's significant enough to take that seriously. Do you disagree with that?
No, that's a huge number, but I've not seen that anywhere.
Yeah, that came out July 16th.
Well, it's interesting because like in 2020, Trump sued Georgia and they tried to get an audit, and they did an audit. It was Republican Governor Brian Kemp and then Brad Raffensperger. Mm-hmm. And that audit out of like 20 million active voters, turned out 6 non-citizens who were registered to vote, and like 5 of them actually voted and they got caught. Like, it's just not a real problem at any scale. Now, I'll have to look into those DHS
numbers. I really encourage people to. So that's the DHS, which is...
I'm not sure I believe them on its face, though. I mean, I can see a reality.
The Trump administration, so I'm sure a lot of people will doubt it. But
well, the DHS has lied a lot before Trump.
Well, let me provide another example. Yeah, this came out literally just in July, but New Jersey said they have about 22,000 non-citizens registered on their rolls. That comes from New Jersey, which is
State. That's a huge number, and I'm glad you brought it up. I'll look into it, but I just don't believe that. Non-citizens can't register to vote. I mean, when you're going to register, you sign a sworn affidavit that they then check against your records to see if you're a citizen. Like, there's a whole bureaucratic process behind the scenes that they use to check, and the burden is currently on the government to prove that. I don't think that we should switch that burden to the average person trying to register. You said that you think there should be some burden. I disagree. I think voting is a constitutional
right. There
already
is a burden.
Well, of course.
How do you determine what that is?
Well, you want to have the...
Like, on a personal level, what do you think is an acceptable amount of burden?
No, I think that overall, we should make voting as accessible as possible while also keeping our elections secure. I mean, I'm sure you feel the same way about
government. Everyone believes that. What you just said is what literally everyone believes.
Well, no, you said there should be some sort of burden.
Yeah.
Do you think there should be a burden to get a gun? Like, do you think that guns should be accessible, or should there be extra burdens?
There should be some level of burden.
Of course.
The whole question is how much of a burden. So I think it should be harder, but... Like, I'm sure you don't believe that voting should have zero burden, correct?
I mean, in an ideal world, if we had zero fraud and we also could have zero burden on voters, that would be good.
That's irrelevant.
So
we need
a baseline level of security measures to make sure that citizens can register non-citizens can't.
My point simply is that there already is burden that exists. It's always going to exist to the end of time. And so the question is how much burden?
I guess in response, would you be okay with increasing that burden to register, increasing it vastly in order to fix something that I just don't think exists?
Well, just because you don't think it doesn't exist.
Well, it doesn't. The Heritage Foundation themselves said it doesn't exist. And
The Heritage Foundation, I think they're a good organization. I appreciate the work they do. I'm speaking directly to the investigations that were just conducted by the federal government as well as New Jersey.
It's weird because the same DHS, after Alex Preddy and Renee Good were killed in Minnesota, like, no matter what you think about that, the same DHS lied and called them terrorists right away. So I think this DHS is okay with brazenly telling lies if it benefits them.
Go to the
New Jersey
example then. Doesn't matter. There's so many examples that have come out in the last few months of different states doing independent investigations of this, and some of them are blue states.
Yep, so I'll have to look into these. If that's true, then that's bad, but I just haven't seen any evidence of that. I think that the same...
But I understand your calculus. Your calculus is I'm worried that we're going to end up having less good people vote because of the fact that there are these burdens.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand that. I think that there is also a responsibility on American citizens, even if it is harder, to overcome those burdens in order to vote. And I don't think that they discriminate based on anything that would be illegal, for example, from the Civil Rights Act or something like that.
No, they don't necessarily discriminate based on race, sex, or gender, but they discriminate based on people who are lower income and rural voters.
Yeah, I think that's overblown. I think sometimes that's you haven't done it, but it's been a soft bigotry of low expectations for many communities.
And it's not even just that. It's not soft bigotry. In North Carolina, they had a case where the North Carolina Republicans requested the voter data by race, and they got the breakdown by race, and they realized that white voters used hunting licenses to vote disproportionately, and black voters used student ID, and the black voters used the week of early voting more. So the Republicans removed the week of early voting, and then they removed the student ID from being accessible, and the North Carolina Supreme Court struck that down and said they were targeting black communities with surgical precision. So I'm not trying to like set low expectations. Yeah. I'm saying there are very real ways you can disenfranchise people. And like,
I would just argue as well, again, these are spectrums that we're going to disagree on, but if you live in Alaska, for example, I could argue that you're disenfranchised just based on where you live versus someone who lives in Chicago or New York City.
I was actually going to bring up the same argument. Like with Alaska, it's a really good one because Senator Lisa Murkowski, a Republican from Alaska, is against the Save America Act because in Alaska, they currently have their own standardized way of making sure people can vote accessibly. It's either vote by mail, register by mail, you can register online, and you have to provide some sort of ID, of course. But what Lisa Murkowski says is there's only like 8 registration centers in all of Alaska, and you have to register in person according to the Save America
Act. So again,
so people would have to take a plane to go register.
So this problem that you're bringing up, again, there are two solutions. You could not do the Save America Act, or you could just create more places where you can go in person.
But that the Save America Act doesn't allocate any funding or anything to help the people create more places. There's no funding to help election officials.
Okay, cool. So if we wanted to add that to the Save America Act, I would be in agreement with you on that.
This is still
the saying, but what I'm fundamentally, and that's fine. If you want to say it's not good enough, I'm okay with that. But what frightens me from Democrats is it always seems to be in one direction rather than the other direction of wanting more in-person voting where fraud is less likely to happen. Yeah.
Thank you. That was a good segment. I think that was good. Just a quick 10. Usually we do that for the bonus. But then, let me do my quick
team
at MocklerMedia.com. Mockler Media is rapidly scaling. If you want to help us grow, you can drop a like below, you can subscribe, and if you know someone that would be good to debate against me, hit up team@MocklerMedia.com. Thank you. That's probably fine. Okay. And then they do this with Jubilee every time I'm there, but can you just shadow my faces for a second? Like, look concerned. Yeah. Look.
At the...
No, just look at me like we're having, like, here, I'll do it. Like, I love the Save America Act.
You want me to do that with my hands?
Say you hate the Save America Act.
I hate the Save America Act.
I love it.
I hate it.
But I love it.
But I hate it.
Okay, that was good. That was it. Okay, I think we're good. We got it. But I love it.
That was great.
That was really good.
Yeah, that was fun. Thank you.
I really appreciate it, sir. You know, America genuinely sometimes lacks conversation like this. Like when I go on Twitter or when I go on these threads or whatever, everyone's so vitriolic and vile. Obviously, like we have heated back and forth or whatever, but I think we overall respected
Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.